Hello, magic seekers, and welcome to It Turns Out She's a Witch.
We're your hosts, Laura and Shannon,
and welcome to our podcast coven.
Shattered.
Back for another week.
We are.
And this is take two because we just started recording and we realised we were very unorganised and had no notes.
That's all good though. They didn't have to know that through the, you know, magical powers of edit and delete.
True.
But we've just told on ourselves because it's fun.
It is funny. We just had a good giggle.
And it's good to keep it real. None of us are bloody perfect podcasters. That's
professional.
For sure. Yeah. But we have fun.
We certainly do.
And we did have a good giggle.
We did.
I still might have a little bit of the giggle left inside me, but that's okay too.
And we were just talking off air about our interview with Sarah Wilder last week and the human design, which we've fallen down that rabbit hole.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Become a little bit obsessive about it. And you were saying some of the feedback that you've had, there's a few listeners out there that have also been intrigued by this.
Yeah, and had some big revelations as well about, you know, things that didn't make sense in their life previously that now they've looked at their human design, they're putting pieces together and understanding themselves more, which is awesome. So
it is awesome.
Yeah.
It's such a awesome tool that the way Sarah explained it involving, you know, astrology and all kinds of different elements, especially from all different world philosophies, I guess, for want of a better word. You know, it's a combination of so many things. Pretty potent stuff, but then also really deep. Like Sarah was saying, she's been studying it for years and it's like a progressive levels of understanding. I'm so keen to have her, firstly, have a reading with her. I want to book one in. And then I'd love to invite her over on Turns Out She's Psychic to do a whole episode on human design.
For sure.
So I'll have to hunt her down. Sarah, if you're listening, I'm coming after you. Did you do yours?
I did do mine and I found out I'm a manifester, but I also agree about having a reading because there was so much that popped up that I have no idea what the terminology is.
Like, a whole new world.
It is a whole new world. It really is. So, yeah, there's many, many layers and aspects to it. So I'm just starting to learn, which is exciting. It's always good to learn something new.
Yeah, sink your teeth into that for a long time.
And what are you?
Such a good question. I fucked this part up in the first recording as well. I was like, no, we're just going to roll with this. But then we fucked even more up and start again.
We did.
So I am a generator.
Yes.
But initially I put my details in incorrectly. I did it with my married name, not the name I was born with. Oh, no, your eyes have just widened as
Does your name matter as well?
Well, it must do because when I did my birth name, because it, you know, how it's your date of birth, your time of birth, very astrology based. Yeah, it changed with my name.
Holy moly. I only put in my first name.
Oh, I thought it asked for your first name and your family name.
I think we're on different websites.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, we could. Well, there's so many out there. And I know Sarah mentioned a couple. And now, just as we're talking, I can't remember if I included them in the show notes, but there was two that she did mention. I think I used Jovial or something. I don't know. Can't remember.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Yep. So it changed depending on my last name. So I used the name that I was born with.
Yep.
And it came up as a generator.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah. But then with my with Turner, my married name, it came up as a projector.
Yeah.
Yeah. So initially I thought I was a projector.
That is so interesting.
But I'm a generator.
And you know what? That's another topic I would love to get into on the podcast in future is numerology and names.
Yeah.
I did some circle work with a woman. Her name was Mel. She was an amazing Indigenous woman and she taught us how to do our numerology on our names. And she actually mentioned, it's always stuck with me, about how the energy of your name definitely changes when you get married. And can change so much within your life just from
doesn't
that.
Doesn't it ever?
It's an energy. So, and I remember I did my maiden name and my married name and they were very different. Like the number that came out of the end and the energy behind that. So
interesting.
It is super interesting. Yeah.
I found it fascinating. Obviously, before Matt and I got married, I still had my maiden name, but we were together a long time before we got married.
Yeah.
And it was one of the things when we did get married, I was looking up why even, you know, bother to get married, essentially, because it's really viewed, like the religious side, it's really viewed, and that was not as important to us. So obviously this is going way off topic now.
It's all good.
It's our style.
Everyone's here for it.
Yeah. It was, you know, when we looked into it, it was that ceremony, it was that outward expression of our commitment, love for each other, and really sending that out to the universe and being surrounded by our family and friends was what meant the most to us.
Yeah.
So, so that was our meaning. That was our why we decided to get married anyway, even though it was like, you've been together so long, you know, why?
Yeah.
And it was always just something important. But going back to the name thing, I always thought I'd be so keen to take on his surname, which I have. But when it actually came down to it, I was like, I don't want to, like, I felt like I was losing something.
Yeah.
But I'm lucky that I work in a job where I work under my maiden name, and
so you can still be
One foot in both worlds.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's that is super cool. And I really love that. I really enjoy that. But it is a big thing, and I think more and more actually women are still keeping their maiden names.
Yeah, well, I've got a few friends
too,
that haven't changed. They've just got families and stuff, but they just go by their name.
Yeah,
and they haven't taken on the husband's name. The children have husband's name.
Yeah, which again is so interesting. But
yeah, it is. Oh gosh, that's another podcast, isn't it? Yeah. About why that is so. But
yeah, that's definitely changing in our culture though as well, because I know around the world, a lot of cultures still keep both names.
Okay.
And even the order in what the names are helps sort of identify your lineage, your family tree, who is your mum, who is your dad.
Well, that makes sense, doesn't it?
I know mum was brought up with a double-barreled surname, and I'm pretty sure Indian community, Indians do a similar thing as well, Italian, maybe even Greek, I think.
Yeah, wow.
I think it was only very recently that in Italy they brought in I don't know if it's a law, if we'd call it a law, but government-wise there was something where it's definitely okay to keep the maiden name for children as well as the father's. Anyway, it's fascinating.
It is super fascinating. Names. Oh, I know, the magic of a name.
Yeah. Yeah. What's
that could in be a name? Another podcast.
It could be, but I love that what you were saying with, what was the name? Was it Mel?
Yes.
That was doing it. That's so cool to look into that. That would be.
Oh, it was fascinating. It was super fascinating. Yeah. Topic.
Love it.
We might have to get her on maybe.
Mm. Go on then.
I will.
Hit her up. You're so connected with so many people. I love it.
So today.
Yes.
We're going to talk about winter solstice because that is coming up. We're releasing this a week before so that everyone has plenty of time to prepare.
Yep.
And get your Yule logs ready.
Gather
nice. The witches. And this episode, it brings us full circle in the Wheel of the Year on the Turns Out She's a Witch podcast too.
Wow.
Which is a little bit special because I was looking back through season one and we released the very first episode of the podcast on winter solstice last year and it was the Meet Shannon one, which is important, so you'll know who the hell I am.
And you did that with Tracy, obviously, that was here in season one with you.
It was.
It's beautiful.
And our first Wheel of the Year ep, therefore, was Imok, which is happening on the 1st of August. So I'm going to have to come up with a variation when the time comes for new content for the next round of the Wheel of the Year.
And you have an idea for that, don't you?
Yeah, I'm thinking I might mix it up and do like a what's happening in the Northern Hemisphere as well as the Southern Hemisphere, because I know that we, always talk about the South, but we have lots of listeners up in the North, which is beautiful, and we'll definitely be including them more.
Yeah, for our listeners in the North?
Yes.
Cool. What will they be experiencing? Is that what we're talking about now?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I know that that we often, like you said, we talk about South because that's where we are. So it's only natural that we lead with that.
Yeah, but yeah.
Like you said, it's really nice to visit the other side of the world.
Definitely, definitely. So our cousins in the North, they'll be at summer solstice, which is also known as Leitha. So they can go back to the second episode of season one, which aired on the 21st of December.
Ooh.
I did my research, so everyone can easily find it, to find out all about those suggestions on how to celebrate.
Okay. Oh, I see. Oh,
but
wow.
Moving forward for the next round of the wheel,
yep.
I will do both, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Might do a little mashup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that idea. Mm-hmm. So going back to the winter solstice for this episode,
mm-hmm.
what are the main themes?
Well, as I said before, it's also known as Yule or as midwinter, and it happens each year for those of us in the Southern Hemisphere around the 20th to the 23rd of June. And for our cousins in the North, it'll be the 21st to the 22nd of December, so right around Christmas time.
Okay.
Where so many of these pagan traditions and symbolisms have been incorporated, but I will tell you more about that later.
Okay, cool. So yeah. That's an important thing to remember is it's the mid of the season, obviously.
Yeah.
Being yep. solstice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that.
And we're at winter solstice is the longest night of the year and the returning of the light. And at the same time in the North, they'll be experiencing summer solstice, which is the longest day and the shortest night.
Mm-hmm.
And they start their descent into those darker months.
Yep.
So for us, it's really that turning point of knowing that summer's going to come back.
Oh.
It's a celebration. It's a celebration.
Yeah, it certainly is for me. I struggle in the winter.
Oh, I do too. And I think with all of us, everyone I speak to lately, just the rain we've had, like I know it's been beautiful this week, but we've
yeah.
had months and months of rain, like
yep.
nonstop torrential pouring freaking rain. So
yep.
I feel like this winter solstice will be a big celebration.
Yeah.
That we're just going to
get the bonfires out and
yeah.
it'll be warming and drying and
hopefully.
So cleansing. And Australia really is a country of extremes.
It it's, really is.
You know, huh? The bushfires and then the droughts and then the floods. It's the light and the dark, baby.
Oh, it sure is. It sure is. So for us in the South, the earth is in its deepest slumber on the longest night of the year, and it's a time of severe cold and darkness in many lands. It's also a time to celebrate that sun and warmth returning, and our days can only get brighter from this point on. And it's also a really strong reminder of that after death there is always a rebirth.
Absolutely. I love that.
So do I.
And I love even hearing it, like every time, it really is that reminder, like it's such a visceral feeling when you just hear those words, death and rebirth. It's just, yeah, I don't know. It's like hopeful.
It is hopeful.
And
yeah.
full of potential.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You can't have new fresh beginnings without endings.
True, true.
Mm. Mm. So the elements associated with the winter and Yule and
the element is earth, which to me makes a lot of sense because I always view winter, well, now since I've found my mm-hmm. way on the pagan path, but I always view...
Oh, I love that, the pagan path.
Pagan path. Mm. But I view winter as this time of settling into the earth and cultivation and that fertile void.
Yeah.
It's like everything drops away, it dies off, and it's that stillness. I always picture like a garden bed and it's just being that earth, just bare earth at the moment. But there's so much happening underneath that you can't see
I
yet.
I picture the underground,
mm.
the underworld. I really picture the darkness and the little tunnels. Like there's still work going on, but it's all underneath.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all hidden.
And it's, although there's there's work going on, it's restful as well. Like it's restorative work. It's reflective work and healing work and all of that sort of stuff, the inner work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
Ah, so, yeah, earth is good. I love that that's makes so much sense.
It does.
Feels right. And what are the colours associated with this festival?
I'm sure you could guess.
Yeah.
Given the name Yule.
Yeah.
But red, green, white, silver and gold. So all those Christmassy colours.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. And are there types of crystals people can work with for Maybon? Is that how you say it?
Oh, actually, I've
given it's not Maybon.
It's not. It's Yule.
Oh, my God. Pardon me.
That's my typo.
I was going to cover for you.
We are so it's professional.
When we're talking about Yule.
Yule.
And I can read it. And one of these, well, heaps of these are my favourite, actually.
Oh, there you go. Well, yeah, we've got clear quartz, bloodstone, garnet, emerald and ruby.
Garnet, emerald and ruby are like, they feel like so good to me.
Yeah.
And clear quartz is like, you know, amazing.
And they're all those colours again.
Yeah. Mm, yeah, exactly.
They're rich, rich, beautiful colours.
Deep and rich. Okay, so foods now. What foods are good for creating a feast to celebrate with?
Well, you have fruitcake.
Of course.
Ale.
Yeah.
Mulled wine, pork, roast root veggies, and eggnog.
Eggnog.
So I'm just, once again, picturing a big Chrissy feast.
Yeah, you can smell it.
Yeah. Although at our Christmas, we never want to eat that because it's like 42 degrees.
Yeah. It's really winter warmers, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Which is why this time of year is awesome.
It is.
For it, obviously. Mulled wine, amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Love the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All the aromats as well in it. Oh, okay. So plants and essential oils associated with Yule.
You've got mint, rosemary, pepper, cinnamon, cedarwood, orange, frankincense, clove, and myrrh.
Of course you do. They're warming as well, aren't they?
They certainly are.
Okay. I'm just picturing my altar, which is good because it segues into the next question here. So what symbols can we use on the altar?
So holly and mistletoe,
yep.
Sun and light. So you could either use little, I don't know if you've got some kind of statue of a sun being or a sun-related god or goddess, and light such as candles, so bringing that warmth into the altar and the returning of the light.
Yeah.
Mm.
I love this.
And another thing I love to do too is use either oracle cards or tarot, so getting the sun card out of the tarot deck and putting that on your altar.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. We can all do that. Okay. When we're talking about celebrations, what can we participate in celebration-wise?
Gift giving.
Yes.
Decorating the Yule tree, feasting, singing, and lighting the Yule log.
Oh, I hope we're going to talk about Yule logs.
I hope we are too. I can't remember what I wrote.
We will. If we get to the end of this, we definitely will. And you'll be like, oh, Lara. Okay, so rituals. What kind of rituals would you recommend for our listeners to do to connect with the energy on the winter solstice?
Well, this one's kind of like a little mini Yule log. That's how I look at it.
Okay.
So you write your dreams and your wishes for the warmer months ahead onto little slips of paper.
Okay.
And fold in them and place them into a dried pine cone. Mm-hmm. So all the little slots.
Yep.
And then you can cast that onto the fire and know that the smoke takes your wishes into the other worlds. And pine cones hold the energy of rebirth, immortality, purification, and inner strength.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a really lovely thing to do. We did it last year and we'll do it again this year because our neighbouring property has a beautiful big tree which we collect the pine cones from. And
yep.
Yeah.
And you each do your own.
We do. Yeah. So it's a bit more individual, I guess, than a Yule log.
So nice. Mm. Okay.
You know what? I don't think I do have Yule logs. So do you want me to talk about that?
I would love, tell us more about a traditional Yule log.
Well, traditional Yule log, it would come from a tree on your own land. And I think traditionally they save a piece of it for the following year as well.
Okay.
But what we did, we had, it was from our a timber from our land and we dried it out and then we cut slits into it, like long slits, and we also drilled some holes for candles so you place the candles. And people do it in all different ways.
Yeah.
They might do it traditionally leading up to Yule, so burn a candle each day, we just did it on actual Yule, and we had like a red candle, a green candle and a white candle, and then we all wrote our slips of paper and you put it into the Yule log and then that gets placed on the fire. So there's lots of variations, but that's how we do it. So we've got the candles going, and then once the candles have burnt down, we've written our intentions, and then at the end of your feast and bonfire you can place it on top. So it's really nice to
watch it burn.
Taking all your wishes into the ethers.
Did you save ash from that?
Yes. Actually, the ash from your solstice fires is awesome to keep. Oh, especially winter solstice. Why? Well, it's got that all that hope and intention and potential.
I love that.
Yeah.
You want to bottle that shit.
Yeah, do.
You do. You like do. Literally want to bottle it.
Yeah.
And so when you've bottled your ash, what could you do with it?
You can use it in spells, any spells moving forward for this next, you know, coming into the warmer months. You can use it at thresholds to like make black salt with. Yep. Oh, gosh, there's just so many possibilities. Use your imagination, really.
I think that I'm going to use it on I don't know if I'd call it a spell candle, but I'm thinking I might, you know, sprinkle some on a candle, and then every time I use, you know, when I'm burning my intentions or my releases, I'm using that candle with all that
hope and all wishes that juju. And
sounds like a simple way to do something. It but is. I'm a baby witch, so
no, I love that.
It's easy enough to do, isn't it?
It really is.
So deities, is that how I say that word? Because I want to say deities, but
deities.
Oh, sorry, guys. Sometimes.
Look, it's just
my mouth doesn't wrap around it the right way.
As we've said, potato, potato.
Yeah.
Tomato, tomato.
Deities. associated with Yule.
Yes, we've got Brigid, Oak and Holly Kings, which we have spoken about at Summer Solstice. I'm pretty sure I spoke about that.
Yeah, and Brigid you've covered too.
I have covered Brigid. Dagda, which is a Celtic. We've got St. Nicholas, which is Christian. Isis, that is Egyptian. And Odin, who is Norse. Mm. So there's quite a selection there. So what I'd recommend for people is, like, jump on Google and just have a read of these different deities and just see who you vibe with, who you connect with. You'll know.
You'll know
if it's one you want to work with or that's research right. or
their properties will jump out at you or not.
That's it.
Oh, this is my absolute favourite part of these. It's our mythology time. I know this question says, do you have any? But I know, and I'm so ready for you to share the mythologies with us.
Yeah, well, I thought I would delve into the reasons many things are traditionally used or decorated at Yule, which I know can be confusing for us here in the Southern Hemisphere as we celebrate Christmas in the middle of summer.
It is a little bit confusing.
It is. Yep. But it's midwinter here right now, so I'm going to go there, even though it's like really Christmassy.
Yep. But, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Mm. So have you ever thought about why we have a Christmas tree or sing carols or anything like that?
Well, the Christmas tree, I didn't actually realise there might be, there's symbolism obviously around that, which you're going to tell me about. But what I was going to say was I just thought, you know, that time of year traditionally in the Northern Hemisphere, it would just be something there to decorate.
There's a pretty tree. Let's bring it inside.
It's pretty and they smell good. And
they do. They do.
But no, I can't say I'm aware of any of the deeper meanings, but I can't wait to hear about it.
Well, these things are in fact pagan in origin. Mm. So I found some great information on learnreligions.com.
Oh, that's a good website.
Amazing website.
They've popped up for me lots, actually.
They've got lots of articles on there. Yeah. And I found one written by Patty Wingington.
Ooh, okay.
9 Christmas traditions with pagan roots. So I thought I would share that.
Yes, please.
With you all.
Do go on.
So Christmas caroling. So the tradition of Christmas caroling actually began as the tradition of wassailing. In centuries past, I don't think I'm saying that right.
Oh, who would know? Don't ask me.
Wassailers. It's like wassailers. Wassailers.
Oh, okay.
Went from door to door singing and drinking to the health of their neighbours. So the concept actually harks back to pre-Christian fertility rites. Huh. Only in those ceremonies, villagers travelled through their fields and orchards in the middle of winter, singing and shouting to drive away any spirits that might inhibit the growth of future crops.
Of course.
So caroling wasn't actually done in churches until St. Francis, around the 13th century, thought it might be a nice idea.
Right.
Mm. So that's where Christmas caroling comes from. It's to, like, get rid of bad spirits in your fields.
Well, that makes sense.
It does. So that's pretty cool.
And that is is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And done in groups like that.
Yeah, done in groups.
Spreading
in the community.
Goodwill for the neighbours as
yeah.
well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's exactly like caroling.
It is. It is. And then kissing under the mistletoe.
Oh,
do you know what?
No.
No? Yay.
No, but I'm familiar
There's
with
all these
doing
things
it.
I know that you just do because you don't really think about why.
Mm-hmm.
So mistletoe has been around for a long time and has been considered a magical plant by everyone from the Druids to the Vikings. The ancient Romans honoured the god Saturn, and to keep him happy, they conducted fertility rituals under mistletoe. Today, we don't go quite that far under the mistletoe. At least, not usually.
Not out in public.
But this could explain where the kissing tradition comes from.
Oh.
Yeah. So they used to get hot and heavy under the mistletoe.
Do they have mistletoe hanging from their bed frames and all of that?
Oh, maybe.
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 It might have been
yeah.
in every bedroom.
Maybe. So the Norse Eddas tell of warriors from opposing tribes meeting under mistletoe and laying down their arms. So it's certainly considered a plant of peace and reconciliation. Also in Norse mythology, mistletoe is associated with Frigga, the goddess of love. Who wouldn't want to smooch under her watchful eye?
Yeah, that's true. Ah, there
so
you go.
So that is mistletoe. And then gift delivery by mythical beings.
Okay. Very Christmassy.
Very, very Christmassy. So you've all heard of Santa Claus,
yes.
who has his roots in the Dutch Sinterklaas
yes.
mythology, which I was going to go into today, but I'm going to save it for Ooh. When it's actual yep. Christmas here.
Bank it.
I'm banking that one.
Yeah.
And with a few elements of Odin and St. Nicholas thrown in for good measure. But how many people have heard of La Befana? The kindly Italian witch who drops off treats for well-behaved children.
Oh.
Or Fru Hol, who gives gifts to women at the time of the winter solstice. So throughout the world, gift-giving mythical beings have been part of local traditions for centuries.
Gift-giving.
Mm.
I love that.
It is lovely. And decking the halls.
With boughs of holly.
Fa-la-la-la-la.
Yeah.
So the Romans loved a good party, and Saturnalia was no exception. So this holiday, which fell on December 17, was a time to honour the god Saturn. And so homes and hearths were decorated with boughs of greenery like vines, ivy and the like. And ancient Egyptians didn't have evergreen trees, but they had palms. So the palm tree was a symbol of resurrection and rebirth. So people often brought the fronds into their homes during the time of winter solstice. So over time, this evolved into the modern tradition of the holiday tree.
Ah.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're just looking at me like, wow.
Going from Egypt to Rome. And
yeah.
It all just, it's
all
that
steeped
green.
Yep. In these beautiful traditions. And hanging ornaments.
Oh, go on.
So during Saturnalia, Roman celebrants often hung metal ornaments outside on trees. So typically the ornaments represented a god, either Saturn or the family's patron deity. The laurel wreath was a popular decoration as well, and early Germanic tribes decorated trees with fruit and candles in honour of Odin for the solstice.
Mm-hmm.
And what about Christmas fruit cake? Have you ever thought about
No.
why the heck we have fruit cake?
No, but there's so much stuff in there. I can only imagine...
Yeah.
That there would be meaning behind every bloody ingredient.
Well, it's become the stuff of legend at Christmas time, that's for sure. Mm. So because once a fruitcake is baked, it will seemingly outlive everyone who comes near it.
Depends what you put in it, love.
True.
How much booze are we putting in?
Oh, a lot of booze. So stories abound of fruitcakes from winter's past magically appearing in the pantry to surprise everyone during the holiday season. What's interesting about the fruitcake is it actually has its origins in ancient Egypt.
Oh, cool.
So there's a tale in the culinary world that the Egyptians placed cakes made of fermented fruit and honey on the tombs of their deceased loved ones, and presumably these cakes would last as long as the pyramids themselves.
Wow.
In later centuries, Roman soldiers carried these cakes made with mashed pomegranates and barley into battle. There are even records of soldiers on crusades carrying honey-laden fruitcakes into the Holy Land with them.
Mm.
So fruitcake goes way back.
And is that because it just kept forever because of the way it was made and then the ingredients
yeah.
it's, you know, there's so much sustenance in all of that.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
And giving presents. Today, Christmas is a huge gift-giving bonanza for retailers far and wide.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a fairly new practice developed within the last 200 to 300 years. So most people...
Fairly new.
So most people who celebrate Christmas associate the practice of gift-giving with the biblical tale of the three wise men who gave gifts of gold, frankincense and myrrh to the newborn baby Jesus.
Yeah.
However...
Mm.
The tradition can also be traced back to other cultures. The Romans gave gifts between Saturnalia and the Calends, and during the Middle Ages, French nuns gave gifts of food and clothing to the poor on St. Nicholas Eve. Interestingly, right up until around the early 1800s, most people exchanged gifts on New Year's Day.
Oh.
And it was usually just one present rather than the massive collection of gifts that's typically given today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's gift giving.
New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So something really for the new year ahead.
That's right. It makes more sense, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does.
I don't think it's going to fly with our kids, but anyway.
Oh, can you imagine that extra week they've got?
Sorry, guys.
And we're going to whittle it down to one.
Oh. And Christmas holly. So for those who celebrate the spiritual aspects of Christmas, there is significant symbolism in the holy bush. The holy bush.
In the holy holly bush. Holly's so pretty though.
It is gorgeous. So for Christians, the red berries represent the blood of Jesus Christ as he died upon the cross, and the sharp-edged leaves are associated with his crown of thorns.
Yikes.
However, in pre-Christian pagan cultures, the holly was associated with the god of winter, the Holly King, doing his annual battle with the Oak King. So holly was known as a wood that could drive off evil spirits as well, so it became handy during the darker half of the year when most of the other trees were bare.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think we will – I think I've mentioned it before about doing an ep on different – wood and wands and things made out of them for their magical properties. So, oh,
yes, that put that on the to-do list.
Definitely. And, oh, the Yule log. I have got it in here. So nowadays when we hear about the Yule log, most people think of a deliciously rich chocolate dessert.
Yeah. Also very yummy.
Very, very yummy. But the Yule log has its origins in the cold winters of Norway on the night of the winter solstice, where it was common to hoist a giant log onto the hearth to celebrate the return of the sun each year. The Norwegians believed that the sun was a giant wheel of fire that rolled away from the earth and began rolling back again on winter solstice.
Oh.
Pretty cool, huh?
It is, and it makes perfect sense that the largest log go on the fire at that night because it's the longest night.
Yeah.
The coldest, longest night, so that would make sense to have the biggest log to stick on the fire.
That's it.
Let alone laden it down with all those good things for good energies for things to come.
Yeah. So that is Yule and winter solstice. So hopefully you can all pull some things from there to either create an altar or have a feast with your family or friends.
Yeah.
Try and have a bonfire. Fingers crossed this weather sticks around and we can have a lovely fire.
It's good for fire. Good weather for fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
What can you share just a couple of things that you're going to put on your altar?
I will be putting those kind of red, orange, green coloured crystals. I usually have I just went to Spotlight, which is like a fabric shop. And I got just little lengths of velvet in all different colours. So that's what I'd change over with mine.
I love velvet.
It's so lush. Yeah. It's beautiful. So I'll probably put like a nice green velvet down and then some, Christmassy coloured candles.
Yeah.
I'll get the sun out of my tarot deck and pop that up.
Nice.
That kind of thing.
And do your pine cone.
Actually, yes, we'll go collect some pine cones, decorate the altar with that, and then we can use them that night.
Mm. And do you create your pine cone mini Yule log ahead of time, or do you do it all on the evening that you're going to burn it?
Oh, look, I don't think it matters, but we do it on the night.
Yeah.
So as I said, like I usually set my altar up. I like to do it a week out, but I'm a bit hopeless sometimes.
Well, that's just real life. It's nice if you can spend that time to be really sort of ceremonial and ritualistic about it, but it doesn't matter. Whatever you've got time for, right?
That's it. Yeah. So if I happen to set it up even 2 days before, I'll try and pop the pine cones on the altar so they can absorb all that juju and then use them on the night. I dare say we'll have like a pork roast or something. And yeah, some nice red wine.
Oh, sounds lovely.
And just enjoy the longest night of the year and know that things are going to shift from that point, which is exciting.
And being together and experiencing that with your family is just such another layer on top.
It really is. And you can't imagine like our ancestors at that point in the year, like that would have been such a pivotal like returning of hope, because their winters would have been so harsh and so long and
without heating,
life or death really, if they hadn't prepared well in the lead up.
That's right. Very nice. Well, let us know your thoughts. Get in touch if you have any questions, or
yes, please do
tag us in any photos of your altar or anything that you want to.
We'd love to see it for sure. And Divine Tool of the Week to finish off with.
Oh, yes. Lovely.
And it's a funny one this week, but I think it's relevant.
Oh, your eyes just then. What have you got?
Ritual attire.
Ritual attire.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to speak it all in a very posh voice. No, I'm not.
For Yule, for winter solstice?
Oh, for any time, really. Okay. But I just,
In general, Divine Tool of the Week.
Yep.
Ritual attire. Okay.
Ritual attire. So I want to make it clear, first of all, particular clothing or jewellery does not make you a witch. Just to set that straight. However, it's
if you want to embrace it.
Exactly. You might like to incorporate something special into ritual as a physical and visual way of separating yourself from the mundane and using it as a portal for stepping into the magical.
Yep.
So, for instance, you may wish to wear a particular item of clothing, such as a robe or a dress for circle work, or perhaps a particular piece of jewellery. And as we spoke about on the Sister Circle episode with Kate Reed, I also have a womb belt that I wear when holding circle to protect my own energy. And it also helps me to avoid an energy hangover, which we did chat about on that episode, especially if I'm holding circle for a large group of women. So that's something, I guess when I put it on, it marks that, okay, I'm ready to step in as a facilitator and hold space.
So it becomes a tool as well as attire.
Definitely.
Just like everything that you're putting on is really a tool, isn't it?
It is.
And you can wear it.
You certainly can. And another ritual item I work with, and so do my daughters, is our moon time rings. So these mark the time of our bleed each month, and are a visual reminder to slow down and take care of ourselves. So it's helped me to change my perception of my period as an inconvenient time and something that I just want to be over with. As a time of reverence and rest for myself. I'm hoping that by introducing my daughters into that way, it's hopefully instilling that in them too, to take that time to rest.
Look, it's a start, isn't it? I mean, it's such deep inner work that needs to be done around that whole topic, because it's an intimidating time, your first period. But I think, mums who are our age treat that time so differently to what our mums would have and what their mums would have. So it's such a nice time in history to be able to be more embracing of that, be more accepting of that amazing rite of passage, isn't it?
It is.
And to at least try to pass that message down, because, it's a tricky time. But
it is. And I'm not saying it's all roses, that's for sure.
When
you have your period, you can feel really shit and being a lot of pain and that kind of thing. But also using it as that portal to go within and rest and reflect
and honor,
take it easy a bit. Maybe skip the gym that day and eat
any
the chocolate.
Excuse will do.
Yeah, exactly.
But honor our amazing bodies and what they're capable of doing. Mm. It's just such an amazing thing when you think about it.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
Mm. And some witches prefer to do their spell casting and ritual work skyclad.
Skyclad, did you say?
Skyclad, have you heard that before?
I can't wait for you to explain what that means.
Well, it basically means nude.
Oh, okay. I've never heard Skyclad.
Oh, really?
Oh, gosh. I've got so much to learn.
I love it. So when you're Skyclad, you really are one with nature.
No kidding.
So some covens do have a particular dress code, and typically Wiccans wear nothing under their ceremonial robes, but it's really personal choice.
It's a bit drafty.
It would be a bit drafty, especially for winter solstice.
Holy smokes. But why is that? Just to be at one with nature, to be as close to nature as possible.
That's it.
Makes sense.
It does make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until there's like ants and stinging nettles and you want to sit down on the ground and
that could be troublesome.
But I get it. I get the idea of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then donning a robe, cape or particular item can be a part of your preparation. And so can taking like a cleansing bath or a ritual swim or sitting in meditation. So once again, it's such a personal thing how you choose to hold ceremony and ritual and how you choose to prepare for it as well.
Mm.
And I thought I'd mention it as our divine tool of the week, as when you wear something with reverence, ritual attire can serve as an extra protection from unwanted energies, enhance the energy of your ritual space and also add power to your work. So whether or not you choose to incorporate special clothing or jewelry into your practice, always remember that magic ultimately comes from within you.
So valid. Such a good point. Yep.
But it is nice if you can
weave it in.
Weave it in. Even if it's like a pendant that you put on before you hold circle or, I don't know, headscarf or anything.
Yep.
Could be anything. Get creative.
It's the symbolism behind it, the intention behind it. Plus such a lovely almost talisman, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, and keeping that thing for that purpose as well. Yeah. So if you have like a particular dress, for instance, just say it's a dress.
Yeah.
You would only wear that when you're holding ritual or celebrating a Sabbath. You probably wouldn't wear it to go grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep it tucked away for
that purpose.
Yeah.
It keeps it sacred.
It does.
Beautiful. I love that. And I love how versatile it can be depending on what it is that you want and how you want to use it and what you're doing. Anything can become that attire-wise, like you're saying.
Certainly can.
Lovely. Any other little morsels?
No, I think that's us. I just hope everyone, can prepare for winter solstice and enjoy it with your friends and family and yay to the returning of the light.
Yes, please.
Yay.
I look forward to that. Well, happy winter solstice and Yule.
Yes, and also happy summer solstice to our listeners in the north. And they will be celebrating that peak energy of the summer.
Yeah.
So enjoy. That's a big celebration too.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And we're looking forward to ours.
Don't want to rush these things, Laura.
All in good time.
All in good time.
Yeah.
I think that's what the wheel really instills.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful.
The phases.
Yeah. Mm. Sitting in each one, marinating in them.
I still like this one. But I get it. Well, take care, everybody.
And we'll see you next week. We love bringing Turns Out She's a Witch to you each week at no cost. So if you like what you hear, please consider supporting the show by donating to our Patreon. We are a small operation researching, coordinating and producing the show ourselves.
Any amount is sincerely appreciated and helps offset the costs of making the show.
As a thank you, you'll get access to some beautiful guided meditation recordings, a Patreon shout out on the podcast. There's monthly live Q&As, competitions and giveaways, as well as a special book and movie review bonus episodes.
For more details, please click the link in the show notes. Of course, if you want to get in touch, send us an email at tospsychic@gmail.com. As always, we welcome your questions. We'd love it if you left a review and shared the podcast with your family and friends, and give us a follow over on Insta at turnsout_she's a witch. Until next time,
thanks for listening and being a part of our podcast coven.